Random House Audio presents A Colossal Failure of Common Sense, The Inside Story of the Collapse of Lehman Brothers, by Lawrence G. McDonald, with Patrick Robinson. Read by Eric Davies. This book is respectfully dedicated to the many thousands of Lehman employees whose lives were thrown into turmoil when the firm collapsed, and among whom I was privileged to work for the four best years of my life. Author's note. It's been said that there are two distinct groups of people in America, Wall Street and Main Street. The former, composed of people who keep the financial plumbing of the latter in good condition so that everyone will prosper. Wall Street has, however, become increasingly complex and opaque, and many on Main Street have only the most basic notion of what it does. In addition, Wall Street, particularly with the collapse and bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers in September 2008, was the epicenter of the worldwide financial crises that brought the global economy close to a complete collapse. My objective in writing A Colossal Failure of Common Sense was twofold. First, to provide Main Street with a worm's-eye view of how markets really work by someone who was on the trading floor in the years leading up to Lehman Brothers' calamitous end. And second, to give my colleagues on Wall Street as crystal-clear an explanation as possible about the real reasons why the legendary Lehman Brothers met with such a swift ending. The lessons therein are important for beginning to understand how we can prevent such disasters in the future and ultimately do a better job of serving Main Street. Lawrence G. McDonald, July 2009. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Abraham Lincoln, June 16, 1858. Prologue. I still live just a few city blocks away from the old Lehman Brothers headquarters at 745 7th Avenue, six blocks and about 10,000 years. I still walk past it two or three times a week, and each time I try to look forward, south toward Wall Street. And I always resolve to keep walking, glancing neither left nor right, locking out the memories, but I always stop. And I see again the light blue livery of Barclays Capital, which represents, for me at least, the flag of an impostor, a pale substitute for the swashbuckling banner that for 158 years was slashed above the entrance to the greatest merchant bank Wall Street ever knew, Lehman Brothers. It was only the fourth largest, but its traditions were those of a banking warrior, the brilliant finance house that had backed, encouraged, and made possible the retail giants Gimbel Brothers, F.W. Woolworth, and Macy's, and the airlines American, National, TWA, and Pan American. They raised the capital for Campbell Soup Company, the Jewel Tea Company, B.F. Goodrich, and they backed the birth of television at RCA, plus the Hollywood studios RKO, Paramount, and 20th Century Fox. They found the money for the Trans-Canada oil pipeline. I suppose, in a sense, I had seen only its demise, the four-year death rattle of 21st century finance, which ended on September 15, 2008. Yet in my mind, I remember the great days. And as I come to a halt outside the building, I know, too, that in the next few moments, I will be engulfed by sadness. But I always stop. And I always stare up at the third floor, where once I worked as a trader on one of the toughest trading floors on earth. And then I find myself counting all the way up to 31, the floor where it all went so catastrophically wrong, the floor that housed the royal court of King Richard. That's Richard S. Fuld, chairman and CEO. Swamped by nostalgia, edged as we all are by a lingering anger, and still plagued by unanswerable questions, I stand and stare upward, sorrowful beyond reason, and trapped by the twin words of those possessed of flawless hindsight. If only. Sometimes I lie awake at night trying to place all the if-onlys in some kind of order. Sometimes the order changes, and sometimes there is a new leader, one single aspect of the Lehman collapse that stands out above all others. But it's never clear, except when I stand right here and look up at the great glass fortress which once housed Lehman and focus on that 31st floor. Then it's clear. Boy, is it ever clear. And the phrase, if only, slams into my brain. If only they had listened. Dick Fuld and his president, Joe Gregory. Three times they were hit with the irredeemable logic of three of the cleverest financial brains on Wall Street, those of Mike Gelband, our global head of fixed income, Alex Kirk, global head of distressed trading research and sales, and Larry McCarthy, head of distressed bond trading. Each and every one of them laid it out, from way back in 2005, that the real estate market was living on borrowed time and that Lehman Brothers was headed directly for the biggest subprime iceberg ever seen, and with the wrong men on the bridge. Dick and Joe turned their backs all three times. It was probably the worst triple since St. Peter denied Christ. Beyond that, there were six more if-onlys, each one as cringe-makingly awful as the last. If only Chairman Fuld had kept his ear close to the ground on the inner workings of his firm, both its triumphs and its mistakes. If he had listened to his generals, met people who formed the heart and soul of Lehman Brothers, the catastrophe might have been avoided. But instead of this, he secluded himself in his palatial offices up there on the 31st floor, remote from the action, dreaming only of accelerating growth, nursing ambitions far removed from reality. If only the secret coup against Fuld and Gregory had taken place months before that clandestine meeting in June 2008. If the 11 managing directors who sat in ostensibly treasonous but ultimately loyal comradeship that night had acted sooner and removed the Lehman leaders, they might have steadied the ship, changing its course. If only the reign of terror that drove out the most brilliant of Lehman's traders and risk-takers had been halted earlier, perhaps in the name of common sense. The top managers might have marshaled their forces immediately when they saw giants such as Mike Gelband being ignored. If only Dick Fuld had kept his anger, resentment, and rudeness under control, especially at that private dinner in the spring of 2008 with Hank Paulson, Secretary of the United States Treasury. That was when Fuld's years of smoldering envy of Goldman Sachs came cascading to the surface and caused Paulson to leave furious that the Lehman boss had disrespected the office he held. Perhaps that was the moment Hank decided he could not bring himself to bail out the bank controlled by Richard S. Fuld. If only President George W. Bush had taken the final desperate call from Fuld's office, a call made by his own cousin, George Walker IV, in the night hours before the bank filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. It might have made a difference. If only. If only. Those two words haunt my dreams. I go back to the fall of Lehman and what might have made things different. For most people, victims or not of this worldwide collapse of the financial markets, it will be, in time, just water over the dam. But it will never be that for me, and my long background as a trader and researcher has prompted me many times to burrow down further to the bedrock, the cause of the crash of 2008. I refer to the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act in 1999. If only President Clinton had never signed the bill repealing Glass-Steagall. Personally, I never thought he much wanted to sign it, but to understand the ramifications, it is necessary to delve deeper, and before I begin my story, I will present you with some critical background information, without which your grasp might be incomplete. It's a 10-minute meadow of wisdom and hindsight, the sort of thing I tend to specialize in. The story begins in the heady, formative years of the Clinton presidency, on a rose-colored quest to change the world, to help the poor.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?